Welcome to The Waggle, presented by Sport Clips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right. Welcome to The Waggle, brought to you by Sport
Clips. Why do you always say that's right before you do it?
Because I'm affirming that they are correct. They have come to the right place.
That's right.
They have pressed play. They've listened to the opening.
You can start again.
No, I'm not starting again. No, that's how we're starting 2020.
With me talking smack?
That's correct. I couldn't even get the sponsor in. Shout out, Sport Clips.
That's right, Sport Clips.
This is The Waggle. That is Davis Sanchez. And his role continues to be to chirp me and to keep me correct. I am Donovan Bennett. We have lots of football to talk to you about. And it is thanks to our friends at Sport Clips. And make sure now that you've got your new resolutions, one of them should look good. Go through, find the location nearest to you. Get online, sportclips.ca. Digitally, if you are that savvy, use a smartphone, use the app. Get yourself a hot steam towel, a massage, a shave.
The VIP experience?
The VIP and the MVP experience. Go hard and get both of them. A couple teams went hard and did their QB experience and did it a little bit early, hoping that maybe that will give them an MVP experience. And if you've listened to The Waggle 2019, as we talked about the offseason 2020, you know that in some order, the quarterbacks we were really intrigued by that were going to be pending free agents are Nick Arbuckle, Calgary Stampeders, and Jeremiah Masoli of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Well, Jeremiah Masoli is still of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. He re-signs. Nick Arbuckle, for now, is not. And he is Ottawa Redblack, for now, because the Redblacks acquired him from the Stamps for a third pick in 2020, plus a conditional pick that if he signs with Ottawa, it means that Calgary will get another pick. And remember, Ottawa being the worst team in the league last year, could very well end up being the first pick in the draft. Masoli, who I was really excited to see what happened with him in free agency, thinking that, well, there's no way Hamilton can bring him back. He's 31. They've got a young starter in Dane Evans. Well, evidently, they brought him back. And Orlando Steinhauer says it's going to be a quarterback competition in camp, assuming they're both healthy. These are two conversations and two players worthy of their own conversations, but I've coupled them together because I find the decisions of two East teams at the quarterback position fascinating. When you saw both of these things happen or heard about them happening, because I'm sure you knew before the rest of us knew, your first thoughts were what?
The Arbuckle situation is still interesting because you don't see that very often. It's free agency where there's often smoke screens. You don't always know what GMs or coaches or what you're hearing in the media, especially when it comes to the evaluation of players and how much they want somebody or how teams or the value that teams put on certain individuals. Well, in this case, it's point blank obvious the value in negotiating now, because Ottawa's started to negotiate, and it's obvious how much they want Nick Arbuckle because they've already put their hand face up on the table and said, we're going to trade a draft pick for you, a third round, I believe, and conditional draft picks, whatever it may be. So it's a unique situation in that regard. It's that a team has now came out ahead of – before they started negotiating, and honestly – and you honestly know how much value they put in a player.
So The Bachelor has restarted, and as you know, I love all things reality TV. Ottawa has and Paul Lapolis have said, listen, you're getting our first impression rose. Like, we're not even waiting for the courtship. Right. We want you to know. We want you here in the nation's capital. We need to rectify our quarterback situation because, quite frankly, our quarterback situation last year was the worst in the league.
Does that put you at a disadvantage?
That was actually my question for
you. I'm going to ask you the question.
Okay,
then.
I think so, because Nick Arbuckle knows that you've given up capital for me. You're going to have to give up some Benjamin, some capital for me in the term of money, because every day, every tick on the clock that gets closer and closer to free agency, you are closer and closer, Marcel Desjardins and Paul Lapolis, to having egg on your face. If I forget about walk out the door, never walk in the door in Ottawa and I go sign with someone else. And there has been talk that Toronto was also in on the trade talks, but they weren't really willing to give up the draft capital because they felt now with Dinwiddie that they would have a shot that if he hits free agency, that they can make a compelling offer. Yeah. There's also real thoughts that Toronto already knows who their quarterback's going to be. And it's a guy who played in Winnipeg last year. And so maybe that's why they weren't as motivated to get into trade talks for Nick Arbuckle. I think that would be a mistake. But I do think this gives
our mistake
to not enter negotiations with Nick Arbuckle because you think Zach Collaros is going to be your starting quarterback. Okay.
I thought when you first said playing for Winnipeg, for some reason I totally forgot about Zach and was thinking Matt Nichols.
Oh.
I'm like, Matt Nichols is going to Toronto? Wow.
I mean,
Zach, for sure.
He might. Yeah. But I think this gives Nick Arbuckle lots of leverage, okay. Does it not?
So what do you say to the person that tells you this is an advantage for the Red Blacks because they now they've let Nick Arbuckle know that they want him and he's now going to be loyal to them or they're going to give him a fair offer and he's going to know that he's wanted and appreciate the fact that he's going to be the guy and more likely to sign there. And there has to be some folks that believe there is some of that involved as well. Someone shows you love and how much they want you. It might entice you to sign.
True. Everyone likes to be loved. Everyone likes to be respected. It will be interesting to see the offers that he's fielding between now and in the beginning of February when we've got free agency heating up and you've been into these negotiations. So you know how many mafia-type rules are happening in the negotiations. So it's like, listen, Nick, if this is Marcel talking, there's an offer on the table right now, but that offer goes away. So if you want to sign, you better sign. And so, because Nick Arbuckle could say, hey, man, appreciate the love, appreciate the respect. That offer sounds real nice. I got my Microsoft Word document. I'm saved. I'm putting it in the saved folder here on my desktop so I can access it whenever. But I would like to hear some other offers in free agency. So can we just put that one to the side? And so if you're Ottawa, do you try and apply some pressure wanting to get this done, saying, we're going to give you this offer, but if it's not signed before we hit free agency, don't think that this is going to be there forever and ever. Amen.
If Nick Arbuckle isn't signed before free agency kicks off, it's because he's asking more than his current market value is.
So Desjardins says, listen, you can hit free agency. The offer's not changing. This is the offer, this is the offer, this is the offer. Is that what you're saying?
No, because if that's the case from an Ottawa standpoint, you have to, if you're Ottawa negotiating, you have to do what you just said and say the offer is only on the table until free agency kicks off or till next week and then I'm pulling it. Because
right.
If you don't, you're going to have him take that offer, shop it, look what else is out there and then come back to you. You don't want that.
Right.
But my point is there's a pretty small slot in which Nick Arbuckle fits in his salary structure. He's not, it's not going to be where Bo and Mike are up there, and it's not going to be backup money anymore. So he's going to fit in with the other lower tier, the James Franklin, Cody Fajardo. He's going to sign something around those guys, and those are fair numbers for. He's going to be a starting quarterback with not a ton of experience, but he's definitely slated in as your number one. So that's the offer. That's the area in which Nick Arbuckle is working. I'm sure Ottawa is going to offer him those type of contracts. He either takes it or he doesn't, but it's interesting. He definitely holds all the cards.
He does. He's 26, started 7 games, filling in for Bo when he was out. Paul Lapolice has been known to really like his game, and he believes he's ready to be a starter, which is why Calgary went ahead and said, okay, well, if we're going to lose you in free agency, we might as well get something back.
Where else are you going to go? Like, where else in his situation to what they've just traded for him? They show they like him. From what everyone says, a good offensive mind to work for and a guy that people like in Paul Lapolice, a great city in Ottawa. I mean, I think you have to. If you're Nick Arbuckle, you got to think strongly about signing if the deal is fair.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so
where
many.
Where else would you go?
There's only so many other places, right?
A job's better that's available, I guess, is my question. Or possibly possibly better.
Toronto is another option. May not be better, but it's another option.
Right.
Technically, Winnipeg is another option. Now, I assume that their starting quarterback next year will be one of the three people who started for them this year, but you never know. I think what's working in the Red Blacks' favor is the lack of other places for him to go.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Before we get off that, because we'll probably move on, we'll beat this one to death. But if Winnipeg is an option, potentially,
mm-hmm.
and he gets Nick Arbuckle gets a free agency and Winnipeg gives him an offer,
mm-hmm.
that might be just what Paul LaPolice wants. Go ahead.
So
it was all a master plan. Paul LaPolice and Marcel Desjardins are playing chess.
And everyone else is playing checkers?
Yeah.
So it's a ruse to get Arbuckle on your team for a month or so.
Because you can't
put some pressure.
You can't sign. After you sign Arbuckle, you can't pay Matt Nichols and Chris Trevler. Boom! They're off to Ottawa. Lapo's got his two quarterbacks from last year. It's a done deal. I got it all figured out.
I suppose.
But that's the reality. That's why Winnipeg's not an option, because if they were to sign, then they couldn't sign the guys they have. So all jokes aside, I think this is a good fit for Ottawa. I believe they'll get something done. Good for them for going out and showing that they doing what they have to do to get the guy they want. A third round pick is not franchise changing in the Canadian draft, and yet you're still,
a first could be though.
A first could be helpful. Yeah.
The biggest issue, one of the biggest issues.
Zion Williamson.
No, but it could be a...
RJ Barrett.
It could be a starting Canadian lineman for 10 years, which is valuable. Could be. It could be a ratio breaker. A starting corner that can play field and short and maybe play some half. Maybe the next Davis Sanchez could be in the draft.
Get a job, DJ.
I'm trying to. One of the biggest issues facing the NBA right now is tampering. And the other part of this is Nick Arbuckle's representatives, and this business is all about relationships, saying, okay, well, I mean, this is what we got from Ottawa. Talking to, other teams about clients that I have on that team that are, under contract and we're trying to maybe extend or renegotiate the contract. In having those conversations, could I not slip in a hypothetical of, hey, man, if there was a 26-year-old quarterback that happened to hit the market on February 11th, what type of range would you be in for him? I think that's another reason why Ottawa would want to get this done relatively quickly. You don't want it to last. The reason, though, to me, and why these conversations are tied together, that I think this is fascinating, and it gives Arbuckle some more leverage, even though there aren't many landing spots, is because the other relatively big free agent fish has gone back to Hamilton in Masoli. And I was not surprised, because I heard that he really liked the organization and really liked Dane Evans. But I was surprised in that, for all the same reasons why Ottawa would be really, really interested to give up capital to get Arbuckle, you'd think someone would be interested to get Masoli, because Masoli's the guy who, when last on the field, was the better player. Are you surprised Masoli, and now it's just a one-year deal, is back in Hamilton?
It told me one thing, and that's that Jeremiah Masoli knows that he's the best quarterback on that team.
Ooh.
And knows that it's going to be his job. And he likes the team he has. That's what that tells me. You look at what you hear about the contract for. This is no slight on or knock on Dane Evans. He was incredible in what he came in and filled in admirably and took his team to the Grey Cup. That being said, his contract is still Hamilton friendly, which would tell me that likely the way it worked out for Jeremiah, if everything was equal, they would probably play Dane Evans. And but Jeremiah's, that being said, Jeremiah says, okay, well, I know this is, maybe the most talented team in the league. I love my coaches. I love the city. And I'm going to re-sign because it's my job. And I'll go lead this team and finish the deal like we should have done last year. And then I'll get a long-term deal in the offseason. That's what Jeremiah Masoli said.
This is why this situation to me is fascinating. Jermaine Masoli is 31 years old. He just signed a one-year deal. You'd think at that point of his football life, he'd want a little bit more years, a little bit more tenure. He was playing lights out when he got hurt in week seven with the ACL injury. 71% of his passes were completions. In not even full season, he put up over 1,500 yards. Dane Evans, 26. Dane Evans, same age as Nick Arbuckle, and had better tape last year than Nick Arbuckle when they were backups. And if I'm Dane Evans, I'm saying Nick Arbuckle is going to get probably a nice contract if Ottawa's giving up draft capital to get him from Ottawa. And I'm going to sit here and hold the clipboard after I led a team to a Grey Cup. That would be tough for me to stomach if I'm Dane Evans. And so if you're Hamilton, you're of two minds of this. Number one, last year proved that you need at least two quarterbacks. So from that standpoint, they are a better football team right now with Masoli re-signed. They've got the best quarterback room in the league. But when now I'm deciding who I want to start if everyone is healthy and performing, does Ty go to the runner in Masoli? Because at his best, he was an MVP candidate. And this is a team that is ready to win now and end that drought. Or does Ty go to the runner to Dane Evans, who we have under contract for a year longer and who is 5 years younger, and he could be our present and our future? Like if it's obviously sports is a meritocracy, and most times the best player wins.
I don't even know what that means.
It's based off of merit.
Oh, thank you.
And so most of the time the eye in the sky doesn't lie. What you put on tape, that's your resume. Best player wins. But sometimes age, contract, situation matters. And if those guys are both even and both playing well after an abbreviated preseason, what can you tell in the preseason? Not that much. Where do they lean in terms of who is the starter? Because if I'm either guy, I feel a type of way if I'm not starter on opening day.
Who should be the starter on opening day, DJ?
If everything is equal, Dane Evans would be my starter on opening day. If everything is being equal.
You don't subscribe to the notion that you don't lose your job to injury?
I don't. No.
No?
I don't. No. And I'll give you a real-life example as to why I think...
When it comes to franchise guys, go ahead, continue.
I think I'll give you a real-life example on why I think it would be pragmatic and prudent for Dane Evans, again, if everything's being equal, to be the starter. Let me take you down memory lane to the Toronto Argonauts, who, when Jim Barker was brought in there from Calgary, one of his mandates was develop quarterbacks. The Argos had no homegrown quarterbacks. They had to pay through the nose in free agency to get guys, and they got guys at the end of their careers. Damon Allen, Ricky Ray. We need to develop quarterbacks was one of the mandates. So he says, okay, you know what I'm going to do? Zach Caleros, Trevor Harris. I'm going to stash you guys on a practice roster and on an injured roster, act like you guys are hurt for an entire year so no one else can touch you. I'm going to develop you slowly, and then when Ricky Ray is hurt, you guys are going to play and you're going to ball out. And it was great. And it kept that team afloat when their starter was injured, and it gave them real competition in the quarterback room. But what happened? Zach Caleros hits free agency. They say, well, we got a team that's ready to win now. Are we going to turn our back on Ricky Ray? And it was prudent. He won them great cups. Fine. Zach Caleros goes to Hamilton. In division, down the highway. You got an MOP candidate. You're playing 3 or 4 times a year. Trevor Harris, same type of thing. Okay, we like him. He and Milanovic are on the same wavelength. But, man, we have Ricky Ray, a Hall of Famer. Trevor Harris leaves, goes to Ottawa. In division. Ends up being their starter, being an MOP candidate guy. Eventually, Ricky Ray retires. And then you turn around and their cupboard is bare in terms of quarterbacks. So much so that we're talking about Zach Caleros on the back end of his career potentially being the Toronto Argos starter and the best option. If you have a young quarterback that you think can be really elite, that is the most coveted asset in this sport. And if it's close, tie goes to the guy who is younger. And that is why I would say Dane Evans, man, listen, 31's not old. Anthony Calvillo, Ricky Ray, they were great for a long, long time. Damon Allen was. But if you think Dane Evans could be the next Bo Levi Mitchell, I just think you say this is I'm giving him the keys to the car.
You just walked Argos fans through the pain.
Oh,
of
my goodness.
Their,
well, they were
history.
Walking through glass as yeah, I was describing
was
all
tough.
Of that.
That was tough for me to even listen to. It's you make a good point, and it is you know, it's a good problem to have. But most people, I believe at this point, will tell you that, and I feel this way, that Jeremiah is head and shoulders better than Dane right now. Mm. So for that reason, all things aren't equal, and the tie doesn't go to the younger quarterback.
Okay. I mean, he does provide you an aspect with his mobility, his ability to tuck the football and run, that Dane at the best of times doesn't, right? Dane's not a statue in the pocket, but I don't think he's a zone read threat that's helping your run game. So I think Masoli is the more dynamic player when healthy. It is 2020. ACL injuries are not what they were in 2000.
Right.
And so I assume that that mobility and that ability to escape and make plays will still be there for Masoli. But yeah, training camp. This will be the most fascinating quarterback. I don't want to say controversy. It's not controversy. Both guys love each other, but quarterback competition in Hamilton since Johnny Manziel. Remember Manziel watch? It seems like 1,000 years ago. But do you remember that?
Yeah, we're out there at camp on the daily at times. Watching.
People were charting throws. What percentage were guys?
I believe I saw you there charting throws a few times.
I was there. I was more charting how many people were wearing Manziel jerseys and having them signed. But again, to the point of how important it is to have a quarterback room that you're always nourishing and planning for the future, there were two guys that, even though Manziel was there and people were ready for him to, you know, as June Jones announced, take over the league and be one of the best players in history of the league. There are two guys that they knew internally, that football ops group knew, these guys are really good football players, and we're going to invest in them, and we're not going to just read press clippings and abandon them. Their names are Jeremiah Masoli and Dane Evans, and they're still there, and they still will be trying to lead this team to a great cup. We're going to take a little bit of a break, a little bit of a time out, but when we get back, speaking of leadership, the Montreal Alouettes have new leadership. Finally, all that and more next on The Waggle. That's right. If the Montreal Alouettes win the Grey Cup, and yes, I started another segment with That's Right.
I knew you were thinking that right now. Too,
the commissioner will not have to hand the Grey Cup to himself. The CFL is no longer the owners of the Grey Cup. Sid Spiegel and Gary Stern, both the founder and the chief executive officer, respectively, of Crawford Steel, are now the owners, the chairmen of the board of the Montreal Alouettes. The arrow is pointing up in Montreal. After a winning season for the first time since 2012, they've got new leadership. They're already interviewing president candidates and GM candidates. They've hit the ground running, and they certainly hit the ground running with their opening press conference with the commissioner. I know you were watching, and I know you were really fascinated by what you saw.
I was, and Gary Stern, Mr. Spiegel, couldn't make it. Gary Stern spoke on behalf of the group, and it was nice to see. Gary Stern is refreshing. He is. It was evident from his opening comments. He's excited to be a part of pro football in Quebec and the Alouettes. And it was also nice that he came out and at the beginning of the availability to the press conference to announce them being the owners and to meet the media. And he just said it. He's like, "Hey, look, I have a complete fear of heights, and I'm up here on the 25th floor, and I have a fear of public speaking, and here I am in front of everybody." And it was nice because you saw right away the human element of it. And right away it had me cheering for him. And although At times I was nervous because he was having a lot of fun and saying a lot of stuff, and including him saying the Argos sucked, which I thought was fun. And he said it was tongue-in-cheek. You obviously said it with respect, but it was good
to
see.
Can you say someone sucks with respect?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he did. So, but no, that's, you know, what he's – all the things that he said, or most of the things that he said – are things that if I'm an Alouettes fan, I want to hear. He's committed for the long term. He understands that there's some growing pains involved. There's some work to do, and he's committed to doing it. He said that you know, he has said that they're well funded, and people around have said that they have the means to go through the ups and downs that are sometimes needed to get things back the way they need to be, and just the sheer excitement of him and their group is great, and it's good to have owners back in Montreal. And I'm a big fan, and I'll say, you know, thank you for sure on I think on behalf of a lot of people, but the Wettenhall family and Robert Wettenhall, who is big part of. I was there for almost a decade, and he was a great owner for us, and he really, you know, went above and beyond to make playing in Montreal great for us. I know back when I was there, so you know, I'd be remiss to not as we move to a new chapter of ownership, there would be remiss not to send some love the way of the Wettenhalls that did a lot for football in Montreal.
Yeah, I think
Quebec.
Part of the reason why it's appealing business opportunity and ownership opportunity is because of the place the franchise is in, the work that the Wettenhalls have done. But I rate Stern for saying and looking at the business and saying that there are further opportunities and that those opportunities are going to take investment. Right, in terms of facilities, in terms of resources. And I would say at this point, when you look at some of their competitors, whether it be in Winnipeg, in Saskatchewan, you know, Montreal has fallen behind in terms of resources for their team and for their football ops. And the most important thing, I think, that now that this chapter is closed and they have ownership, is that they have stability. This is a team that was in the postseason for the first time in 4 years. They found the coach. They've given him a new deal. It's taken off the interim tag. Kari Jones can be the face of the franchise so that the owners don't have to speak a lot because Kari doesn't have a time speaking or smiling. They've got a quarterback. They've got this ownership thing taken care of, and now they can just worry about the next phase, and that's bringing the Grey Cup back there. Literally in
the next phase
terms
is finding a president and a GM.
Well, yes, certainly. And I will say that I also rate the fact that he acknowledged that whoever that person is, or people are, will have to be able to speak French.
Which makes me nervous because now you've eliminated 97% of the potential candidates.
But you can learn to speak French.
I think he used the word fluently, but maybe he can backtrack from that a little bit and just say speaks French.
Yeah,
it is important, obviously, for the relations. I think the president. I don't think. The president in Montreal, because a lot of that is the business. GM, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But the president, because of all the business relationships and the corporate partnerships that are duties and relationships the president has, it's important in that province of Quebec that you can't speak French as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the GM standpoint, a lot of it is dealing with media. And, God love Kavis Reed. I don't think he is.
GM's job is to find players and put a good team on the field. It's not deal with the media.
And deal with the media because
no, it's not his job.
You were not necessarily pleased with the way Kavis Reed dealt with the media at times. And
I didn't care that he's what language he spoke. I just wish he spoke a language of transparency.
It's fine.
And accepting responsibility.
But that's part of the job. My point, in not to bring Kavis Reed up again, as much as Alouette fans are trying to look forward, is I don't think he's writing any French textbooks anytime soon. Like his French wasn't that fluent, but he was able to get by and answer a couple questions. So congratulations to Montreal.
Yes, yes.
You've got new owners, and now we will patiently await your new president and your GM. And again, by the sounds of it, the amount of meetings that they have had, it sounds like those announcements hopefully will be coming relatively soon.
I was probably the sharpest guy that I talked to on a this is a friend, so I am. There's definitely I'm coming from a place of personal interest, but and I don't even know if this gentleman wants a job, but his name is always brought up by people around the league because everyone knows how smart he is, what a football guy he is, and that's Dwayne Ford.
I knew
it's
you
your
were
guy.
There. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's true. Like, I don't know if he wants to. I know he has had interest in the past. I don't know where he's at right now in his life if he wants to do it. But could you think of anybody who would be a better GM right now than Dwayne Ford?
I will quote Sam Mitchell in answering this question. 0-0-0. I don't think of anybody who could be a better GM and
respected. Not just his football knowledge, because he's humble, so he doesn't always have to let you know what he knows. But if you talk to him, I talk to him about stuff, and I'm always like, he knows more. There's a lot of other guys that say a lot because they want everyone to know how much they know. Dwayne doesn't say a whole lot, but he knows the ins and outs of everything. He just speaks when he feels like he needs to, and that's not all the time. And then that, plus the fact he's been around the league as a player, he's been around in media for 20 years, and he's respected as a guy who you know that he's a guy who has honor and respect amongst people around the league. So I don't know how his name is brought up and someone doesn't try to drag him into a franchise and instead of always recycling mm-hmm. all the same guys that have been doing it before.
And he's a savant when it comes to the draft. Oh. Like, it's crazy the amount of Canadian kids, amateur kids at all levels, high school, university, in the States, in Canada, that he knows about and has information about. Like, I remember working with him, and he would tell me about, oh, well, there's this guy who, you know, he spent a lot of his life in the United States, but his grandparents had a cottage in Canada. And if you add up the cumulative days that he spent in Canada, he would count as a Canadian if he were to enter the draft. Like, just stuff like that he knows is next level. And to put a bow on this, you know what language he speaks fluently?
Like, does he really?
He not only does he speak French fluently, I'm about to spike the football on Dwayne Ford as a GM candidate. He taught French.
Really?
This is how next level he is. And I may be misremembering the story, but when he went into teaching, right, he was a teacher. Now, yeah. His job as a teacher and a coach when he was first getting into media. When he went into teaching, he, and this is what a GM would do, you look for, inequities in any marketplace. And everyone knows the story. It's not only in Ontario, across the country. It is very difficult to get a teaching job in at this point in Canada. There is more supply than there is demand. And so when he was getting his teaching degree and he's joining the teaching workforce a bit late because he was playing after he went to university, he took a studies in discipline in French because he knew that, well, it's tough. Everyone wants to be a phys ed teacher. Anybody could teach geography. But there are not many people who can teach French. And so the school boards are always looking for someone to get in teaching French. And then from there, you end up teaching, whatever you want.
Yeah.
So he broke in and learned French and taught French. So, yeah, fluent in French is Dwayne Ford. Well, whoever the GM is, there are two players that will not be up in free agency, and that would be Nick Marshall, the defensive back.
Ah.
There was the one NFL workout with the Bengals, but he's going back to Regina. You are a defensive back, will and always be one. For me, he is one of the best in the league. That is big for the Riders, but maybe just as big, the Edmonton Eskimos re-signing Shaq
Huge!
Cooper. Who Monster. Was set to become a free agent in Monster. February and would have been, Monster. If not the highest rated running back, close to it. And naturally, as a running back, he's a guy who I love to watch. Those are two.
What they call that game? NBA All-Star Weekend. It's not the dunk. It's like the 2 days before. It's not the dunk contest. It's all the young players.
Oh, the Rising Stars game.
That's what Shaq Cooper is.
I believe Schick is the sponsor. The Schick Rising
he
Stars.
He is a rising star. Every time we saw him play last year, CJ Gable's a top 3-4 running back in this league for sure. And every time we saw Shaq Cooper on the rock, we said he got to be a starter somewhere. He's that guy's a starting running back. He can play. Big re-sign to get that rising star back in green and gold.
Yeah, 2 seasons with the X in you know spot duty at that time. 5.5 yards per carry in the CFL, in any league, that is work. So he is off the board. We will take a quick break. But lastly, coming up, we're going to bring it back. We got tied up with playoffs, but I'm going to surprise Davis with random stories and get his take. Objectionable conduct coming up before the end of the Waggle. Objectionable conduct. It is that time. I randomly bring up 2 stories that generally have nothing to do with football and get Davis's take. Davis, 2 things about communication or lack thereof had people upset. I want to hear from you. Who's in the wrong? Who's in the right? Your thoughts. Young Jacob is a Maple Leafs fan, and his family wanted to get him a birthday cake to celebrate that for his 8th birthday. So they asked the bakery, can we get a Maple Leaf logo on his cake for his 8th birthday? Well, they got one, but it was not a logo of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And maybe it's because he is residing in Quebec. He got a Maple Leaf Foods logo on his cake. The family was not very happy. Now, is this a breakdown of communication where you need to specify exactly which Maple Leafs you want, or my belief that someone at the bakery was probably a Habs fan and said, "No mas, you aren't getting a Leafs logo on your cake. This is what you're getting. I'm fulfilling the order, but I'm not promoting the Maple Leafs." What is your take?
That is a Maple Leafs hot dog logo. And, it is. That, you know what? If you want something specific, if they don't have Maple Leaf, the Maple Leafs Toronto sports team logo on their website as they sell their cakes or whatever it is, you better send a picture of what you want or you're going to get whatever Maple Leaf that they interpret that you want. So that's dad's fault. That's mom's fault.
Okay, now is this dad's fault? Because there's a father in Sacramento who's booking a hotel for his family of 4 for New Year's Eve, the Doubletree Hilton. And thought, okay, I'm just booking, it's no different. He was upset because he was in for a rude awakening, a surprise when he checked into the hotel. He's upset because the hotel did not inform him that on the premises was going to be a play suite. Yes, that's right, Davis. There was a swingers party at the hotel while his family was staying there, and he was very upset that nearly 1,000 guests were expected to attend California's biggest swingers party promoted by Club Allures. And so he wanted a full refund and an apology. Now, the hotel, they have conferences all the time. They don't tell all of their guests. Does he have a claim that he should be upset that the event called Sex-Abration was going on in the Grand Ballroom on New Year's Eve while he was looking for a family fun adventure staying at the hotel? He got an adventure. I just don't know if it was family friendly.
That's tough right there. That's a tough one right there. That is a tough one.
And so the hotel refused the refund.
So, I mean, from the hotel standpoint, they don't have to advertise what guests or what conference they have in town. Maybe it was a Star Trek convention. I hate Star Trek. I mean, it's as long as there aren't lewd acts being done in the lobby in public, which you can't do anyway. So, really, from a legal standpoint, the hotel is not wrong. From the guest standpoint, I can understand why they may want the hotel to rebate them or move them or something, but sometimes you roll the dice.
Yeah, it came up snake eyes for him. I will say
maybe he went down to the party, put the kids to bed, went down to the party. Maybe it wasn't.
I don't think you can get a refund.
Maybe it was 7-Eleven.
Maybe it's an opportunity for him to have a Birds and the Bees conversation with his young children.
So are there mats and things like that around the room for the swingers
I don't know.
Party?
You seem to know a lot. Well, I don't know.
If you're at a swing,
you're asking a leading question.
So this is a trapeze. Like swinging. Trapeze. Swinging. You mean like swings that you swing on and you, if you fall, there's mats and stuff.
I mean swinging the lifestyle.
Oh, I had no idea. I thought you were talking about swinging like from the jungle gym.
Okay,
forget it. All right.
Acrobatics.
Right.
I mean, there could have been some acrobatics and there could have been some swinging, but it was a swinging lifestyle party. I think before we both get fired, we're just going to end the waggle here. Thanks for listening.